Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spirit Seeker Hour. Spirit Seeker Hour is your chance to delve into the world of your inner spirit. The Spirit Seeker Hour is brought to you by Spirit Seeker Magazine. Go to www.spiritseeker.com to find out more. And now, here's Cindy Meyer.
Hello and welcome, and this is the weekly Spirit Seeker radio show hosted by Cindy Meyer, and it's every Tuesday evening from 7 to 8 or 7 to 9, depending. Sometimes I have one guest and sometimes I have two. And the show is brought to you by Spirit Seeker Magazine, which we have our November issue up, and you can read it at www.spiritseeker.com. This is our 14th year in print in the Midwest. We started off in St. Louis, then expanded to Kansas City, and have now added Chicago, and we are all throughout Missouri. So it's really a blessing each month to see what articles come together. No two issues are the same, and I must say that, you know, it's always just this delight to birth a new issue, but nothing like what we're going to hear about tonight. Tonight, we have a guest that I have, I've heard about him for years, and I read something that he offers all of us, which we will tell you about in a moment, every single day. This is how I start my day off with Mr. Scott Bloom. He is my guest this evening, and he is the best-selling author of Waiting for Autumn and Summer's Path, and we are going to be hearing about his brand new book, Winter Moon Rises, tonight. So this gentleman, many of you know from the emails that arrive in your email box, it's normally around 3:30 or 4 in the morning, and we get our daily om. com. And there's a daily om horoscope, there's a daily om spiritual reading, there's a daily om music, and oftentimes the music that you are hearing about in Spirit Seeker Magazine each month, I have heard about from Scott Bloom, and then we contact the, you know, whoever is producing the music. So without further ado, I want to bring him on. He is a filmmaker, multimedia artist, on and on. So Scott, welcome to the call. Come on.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh my gosh! You must not sleep is what I've come to the conclusion. But you know, you live in Ashland, Oregon, with your wife and business partner, Madison Taylor, and your son Oliver Moon. Which, what a name!
Yes, he gave me his he gave us his name, so we were obliged to use it.
Yeah, well, it's a great name, and so, you know, we could go so many directions in this time we have here together, but, you know, the Spirit Seeker listeners are people who are interested in what you have to talk about, so why don't we start off with, you know, this is the third in your trilogy, the third book in the trilogy. Let's start there, and then we'll segue over to the other things you're doing. So let's start with, you know, Waiting for Autumn and how that came to be. And we won't put a lot of information on it, but I know that this is a trilogy based on your personal journey into fatherhood. So let's just, you know, start with Waiting for Autumn, and so that we can bring people up to speed with what we're offering in this new book.
Sounds good. Well, Waiting for Autumn was my first book. My wife, Madison, is responsible for all of the inspirational messages on Daily Om. So I was actually quite surprised when me, being the techno geek and business guy, was given a book. It was sort of downloaded to me in a few seconds. And I did my best to ignore it and convince myself that I wasn't a writer. That was my wife's job. And after a while, the book was so painful inside of me that I decided to write just to get it out of me. And that book is primarily, in retrospect, I didn't realize it at the time. I just thought it was this weird babble that was coming through me. But in retrospect, I realized that it was essentially about my own personal spiritual awakening and how I met a guru in my late teens that was responsible for my own spiritual awakening. And so that's what Waiting for Autumn was about from a practical standpoint, but from a conceptual standpoint and a spiritual standpoint, it was essentially about the power of love, which was the overall theme that drove the book.
Well, and you started with Summer's Path. I guess I should have started there, but it just, I don't know why. I just kept hearing to ask you about Autumn, Waiting for Autumn first. So Summer's Path was the introduction. So let's hear about that just a moment before we go to Winter Moon.
Sure. So I did, the reason maybe you came up with asking about Waiting for Autumn first is because that was the first book I wrote, and it was the first book that came out in hardcover. I did write the prequel to Summer's Path second, although it does take place first in the trilogy. So in retrospect, I would ask, you know, if you wanted to read all of them, start with Summer's Path. But essentially, that book is about a man who has a fatal disease, and just as he's about to lose all hope, he meets an angel in his dreams who agrees to take over his diseased body in return for giving him the body of a puppy. So that's what Summer's Path is about. And in general, if you look at the theme of Waiting for Autumn being about love, Summer's Path is about death.
Mm-hmm. And then we come to Winter Moon Rises. And
yes.
To me, you know, I've been involved with your books, you know, because I work with, you know, people, publicists, East Coast, West Coast, and Hay House, all these different things. So I kind of get to see a lot coming across my desk. There is more energy around this book than I've seen with the other books. And I know why. I mean, I have my own take on it. I think everyone should read Winter Moon Rises, especially anyone who's a parent or anyone who just wants to understand life and life's challenges.
Well, basically, I'd love to hear why you think there's a lot of energy around that.
Well, I think that this book is so very personal, and we really get to know you in this book. And, you know, it's fiction, but it's not. I mean, it is, but it isn't. So,
right. Well, I call all of my books fiction because it's a good catch-all, and in some ways it's insurance. So in case I say something that wasn't 100% true, I don't have to worry about backtracking because I can say it was just fiction. But definitely, you're right. This book is a lot more personal than any other book that I've written, and the majority of it is actually true. Although there were, you know, definitely some things I had to make fiction in order to fit with the rest of the series, and also to make it more of an interesting read so it didn't come across as, you know, a journal entries. But yeah, basically what it's about is it is about my journey into fatherhood, and the overall theme is about unborn children and how we can all access the magical world of unborn children, because that's where we come from. We have a tendency to forget it as we get older, but I think we all sort of remember it as we're embarking on the journey of parenthood. Especially women, I think they identify with their unborn children more than men. But I was fortunate enough to take that journey with my wife, Madison.
So in this book, you know, you had visioned being a father a long time before this actually happened. And so, you know, you talk about that you had this relationship with the unborn child and et cetera. And, you know, most men are really not that aware, as we both know. And so for you to have had this total relationship, I think it's quite fascinating. And right now, the children that are coming, you know, onto planet Earth are much more evolved than even 10 years ago.
Yeah, they sure seem to be. they definitely are. And I was fortunate enough to have relationships with my unborn child several years before we embarked on having children. We had been together for almost 20 years before we decided to have a child. And the 3 or 4 years leading up to it didn't seem like that much time in context of the rest of our relationship, but in retrospect, that did seem like a long time. But yes, definitely. I don't know if it's all about men not being sensitive to that or not. That's definitely changing in the same way that you're saying the children are becoming more involved. I think that the male species is becoming more involved as well, and that was one of the conclusions I came to during my journey as well.
Well, and you talked a little bit about that, but what I'd like to you know, there's several directions we could go. So I'm just like, whoa, I want to ask so many things. So I think what I'd really, where I'd like to go is, since a good part of the book does deal with the relationship with the spirit of unborn children, and, you know, your philosophy is totally in sync with what I've felt. And the first time, you know, I heard it was probably 1992 when I was doing some deep, deep work. And, you know, the first time I heard, well, you picked your parents, you know, why did you pick them? And I was like, I would never have picked these two people as my parents. No, I did not pick them. And, you know, and you know, learning that everything is a choice and that souls incarnate for different purposes. And, you know, it's so interesting because I was sharing with a friend that, you know, had I not chosen my parents, I would probably, you know, perhaps not be doing the work that I'm doing, because it gave me a lot of, you know, wisdom, compassion, understanding, et cetera. So let's talk about that, because not everyone understands this theory, that, you know, this way of looking at soul incarnation. So let's look at this from a karmic standpoint, et cetera, if you would, please.
Sure. Well, the first thing is that I don't believe that life begins with birth, at least the birth that we know it, and ends with death. I believe that birth and death are very important transitions, especially on our time on Earth. But I believe that our soul is in existence for much longer, and those transitions are simply marking points within sort of a longer continuum. So I think that that's the first thing to understand when you start thinking about how do souls come into our lives? How do unborn children come into our lives and incarnate here on Earth? So once you keep that in mind, you realize that when you become pregnant, you're not actually creating a baby from nothingness. What you're doing is you're inviting a soul that already exists into your world. And what they are doing, what these unborn children are doing when they're in the spirit world, is essentially trying to come to terms with who are the right partners for them to help them with their karmic debt that they have acquired in their previous lifetimes. Or if you look at it, you know, in several lifetimes, like the Eastern philosophies, that's an easy way to look at it. But if you look at it as a continuum, basically, what is the karmic debt that is acquired before the time that they come in onto this planet? So what they want to do is they want to find parents that are compatible with the lessons that they need to learn on this planet. And so they essentially are comparison shopping for different parents to see which ones are going to be most compatible with what they need to learn this time around.
I totally, 100% agree with this philosophy. And so here you are, you're writing about, I wonder what child will choose us. You know, basically, I mean, you were communicating with the child saying, we're ready to be parents. We are so ready. And, you know, and I like the way you explain it, saying that, you know, it's a natural progression of self-healing to eventually, I'm reading this directly from your book, it's, you know, talking about the personal healing with others and, you know, sharing these gifts with your children and, you know, like the whole, it's almost like a psychic agreement of, okay, you two, I know what you're working on in your lives. I can see you down on planet Earth. This is what I need to learn when I come in. So, okay, I think you two can handle
right.
matching my soul purpose for, you know, incarnation this time. And, you know, and oftentimes, you know, when I work with clients, I can, you know, you can tell they are so ready and so anxious. And when they relax, then they get pregnant, you know. And there's, but it's quite exciting. And what I really like is that you write the book, you know, for the most part, though it's fiction, et cetera, it's from a male voice, and you're talking about being a parent from a male perspective. And I wonder if you could talk just a little bit about this and how it's different from the female perspective.
Well, I was raised as sort of in the height of women's liberation movement, and so when I was growing up, not only was I taught, but I believed with every fiber of my being that men and women were 100% equal. And everything they do, you know, anything that a man can do, a woman can do, blah, 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 totally believed it and continued to feel that way up until essentially the day that Madison got pregnant. And then at that point, I started to realize that there are actually differences in the genders. And one of the most obvious ones is the fact that she was carrying the baby and I wasn't. So at that point, there was some interesting things that sort of kicked in. And in some ways, I was like an alien coming to Earth for the first time and saying, so what is this male and woman, male and female thing all about anyway? Because I never really thought of it. I always thought, you know, we're all basically one. I don't understand, you know, what all the hubbub was about. But then the first thing that I identified with is just these instinctual, elements that we all sort of know about, all these cliches started to play into my life as far as, protection and all of the fears basically had a very masculine bent to them, like, you know, can I afford this child? Can I support this family? What am I going to do about college? You know, these types of things and really got me back grounded because I'm oftentimes, you know, in the clouds as far as what do I feel and looking at everything almost from a metaphysical standpoint. But it really brought me down to earth and identifying with the physical as a male. And the second thing that really forced me to look at was, what is a father? You know, first of all, am I qualified to be a parent? Do I have the money, etc.? But then do I have the wisdom? Am I worthy of actually bringing another soul into this world and teaching them about what is it like to be an evolved human in this day and age? Which, you know, was definitely a big responsibility that I was trying to come to terms with. But more important than that was, what is it like to be a father? And so from my own perspective, my father left my mother when I was very young, and her second husband adopted me and took care of me. And so that was one of those issues where I needed to figure out before, can I be a good father? What was a father? Is a father the one who brings the child into this earth, or is it the one that nurtures them into childhood and adulthood? So these were some of the questions that came to me. And although it started off as being, you know, just being afraid of being a parent, then being a father became even more intimidating.
Well, yeah, and we have similar experiences. My father wound up, you know, it was a complicated situation, and so my mother and uncle coerced him, and it was the best decision overall, to let our stepfather adopt my older brother and me. So, you know, it was very different. And then I grew up with my younger brothers never even knowing that we had a different father because we all grew up with the same last name. And we called the same person dad. So no one even knew that it was like this deep, like hidden secret in our family. So when I became a mother, I understand exactly what you're talking about. It's like when you have that schism sort of like where, you know, you had a stepfather who became your father, but the other father's gone, or vice versa, it happens in both ways. It's kind of like it's a different roadmap to navigate.
Right, absolutely. And that brought up further complications as I went down that path. But I don't want to derail the conversation. So if you have other things in mind, please ask me.
No. It's just the whole thing. But I love how you talk about the woman is nesting and preparing that and taking care of her body and the child, and then all of a sudden, you know, the father is thinking all the thoughts that you talked about. You know, can I provide, et cetera. And then all of a sudden, the parents are in sync again.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Then we're both completely panicked, not sure what we've just done. For sure.
I know. It seems so far away, but and you know the 9 months is so symbolic. You know, it's just such a wonderful number.
Right.
But getting on with this. Okay, so here we are. The gender roles. We've talked a little bit about that, and And then, you know, the whole thing of in your book you ask the question, are men necessary? Because, you know, and then you go into it from your perspective. So can you just share just a little bit about your take on what's happening in the U.S. right now and how we can really all benefit from these words in this book about men and women being much more co-parenting and co-everything, co-creating, really?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So as I was coming to terms with being a father, you know, one of the key aspects of being a father is gender, being male, and I have always identified with females throughout my entire life. So in addition to thinking that I was 100% equal, I guess probably more identified with women. And so when I was then basically informed that it was a possibility that I was going to have a boy, which never in a million years would I consider that, I then began to question the whole concept of what gender was. And so I started doing a lot of research about, you know, what does it mean to be male, what does it mean to be female, et cetera. And one of the things that struck me as incredible was the fact that in today's day and age, that there are actually statistically more females than there are males in America. And, you know, in addition to growing up with equal rights and women's lib, I also grew up with Darwinism and the whole concept of evolution, and seeing that when the survival of the fittest, when a species is no longer necessary, they become phased out. And when I saw that there was 52% women and 48% men, that was definitely statistically important. Also coming from the spiritual community with De Leon, et cetera, I'm very, very aware of everything that's going on with, you know, the worshiping of the divine feminine and how that's become a pretty substantial movement within the spiritual community. Rightly so, because I think that what has happened over the years is the patriarchal society has essentially perverted the relationship between men and women to the point where not only did we need equal rights from a, you know, financial and capitalistic perspective, but from a spiritual perspective, we needed to bring the big guns out in order to get balance back into the world. And so I was coming to terms with all of this, and, you know, since I was bringing a child into this world, we all want our child to have every advantage possible. And so when I saw that that not only were the spiritual community spending so much time glorifying the divine feminine, but it looked like evolution-wise that we might actually be phasing out men altogether, I became a lot more panicked, not just for myself, but for my child, that I didn't want to bring them into this world where they were becoming obsolete.
Right. You know, it's just so fascinating with different cultures, you know, like in the, you know, in some of the Asian cultures, you know, the man is valued, the woman is not, you know, I mean, it's changing. All of this is changing. But in the United States, there's just really, you know, that has not totally been the case. But you know, it's still confusing, like with gender roles. I mean, I grew up with five brothers and didn't have a sister, you know, so I kind of thought that the way I was raised was pretty normal. You know, you just like stick up for yourself, et cetera. But yet my mother played a traditional role. So when I became a mother myself, I really had to look at this, and it's very confusing unless you do your own self-discovery with it. And then, you know, don't you think when you come right down to it, when you become a parent, there's just no manual. There is no manual. You have to, you know, you can read book after book after book, but when it really comes down to it, you have to do your own soul discovery to figure out, you know, what you want to do with this wonderful opportunity to be a parent. I mean, I look at it as I have three children, and I look at it as such an honor and a privilege to guide these young people.
Right, absolutely. And I think that at the end of the day, instead of using your brain, you truly have to use your intuition, because what you're trying to do is communicate on a soul level with another soul. And, you know, just because physically they might have been on the earth a lot less than you have, it's very possible that their soul has been around much longer than you have. And so not only do you need to treat them as an equal, but in some cases you definitely have to revere them as an elder as well. So at least my limited experience with child raising is just doing everything you can to acknowledge that not only do you not have a how-to book on how to raise a child, but most of the time that information on how to raise a child comes directly from the child themselves.
Oh, I know. There are no two the same.
Right.
But years ago when I was first doing a lot of this work, I would plan it when my children, personal growth seminars in my home, I would do it when my children were at their father's. So they would be going to their dad's for that weekend, and my house would be filled with trainers and everything from A to Z with personal growth. And I can remember several times my children would feel the stress from me preparing for all of this. And, the trainers would come in and they'd see the kids acting out, because they were like upset. Their little peaceful mom, who normally was like calm, was like, you know how it is when you're preparing. It's like having a house full of guests, right? And I remember the trainers would say, what are you not dealing with that your children are acting out?
Right.
It would be, you'd have to really look at it as, and I remember a friend of mine saying that when her daughter was 6 years old, she looked at her, and she was half Indian, half Hindu, and then her mother, and she looked at her and she said, I was your grandmother in another lifetime. And just stared her down. And in that moment, my girlfriend knew that this child, it was the truth. How could, it's age six. She just looked at her and she said, I know you. I was your grandmother before. And she just had to surrender. This, was not had to, but she did. So a lot of what you talk about in all three books are these soul contracts, becoming a parent, serving a soul contract.
Right, absolutely. Well, essentially, a soul contract is simply an agreement with the universe that that establishes what you are agreed to learn when you come to Earth. So it's not learning the alphabet or how to multiply without times table, without any calculator or whatever. It's more along the lines of what are these core issues to learn, like love or compassion, these types of things. So basic, it could be as simple as, compassion. You're going to learn compassion this time. And everything that you're going to do on this planet is going to help you learn that. Maybe you're going to reap the benefits of learning that, learning compassion in this lifetime. Maybe you're going to reap the benefits in a future lifetime, or maybe it's simply to become more of a complete being and balance out what might have happened in a previous life. It doesn't really explain necessarily why, but what you have to learn. So when you do that, when we're talking about earlier about choosing your parents, you might say, as you said at the beginning, why would I ever choose these parents? You come into Earth and let's say you're completely destitute. Your parents don't have any money whatsoever, and your father, leaves your mother without any support whatsoever when you're 1 week old, and then your mother dies when you're 2 years old, etc. It's like, why would I ever pick that? That's so incredibly hurtful. Well, perhaps you do need to learn compassion. You do need to understand what is it like to be in that situation, so then you can help others in the future. So that's essentially how soul contracts work, is essentially trying to having an agreement with the universe so you can learn these very important lessons that are ultimately the whole reason that we're all born onto this planet, is to be able to leave the world in a better place than it was before we came here. So what are the things that are going to help the universe as a whole for you to know?
Wow, and on we go, you know, and it's and you know, I've studied a lot of neonatal psychology and you know, in England they have they're a little more open-minded with working with parents with the delivery process, and they understand they just have done more with midwives and delivery teams with consciousness. And I mean, we're getting there in the United States, but it's still different. But Dr. Thomas Vernier, who's a French doctor, he always thought, you know, babies don't have any consciousness until they're born, you know, and it's like, you know, you bring them out, and then once they come into the world, you know, then they're beings, so to speak. Until one day he delivered a baby, and the baby stared him down. And he writes about it in his book. He said, at that moment I realized, oh my gosh, these little beings that are born are fully awake. And that's when he changed the whole way he delivered babies. He had dim lights, he had, you know, music and quiet environment, and he was very gentle in his deliveries. But before that, he'd yank them out, turn them upside down, smack them like every other obstetrician that doesn't really get it. And, you know, so now that there's, you know, and then, I don't know, I've just studied a lot of this, you know, the clinical hypnotherapists that have, you know, they take babies back, like they'll play music that was played when the baby was in the womb. And then, you know, then later that music is played and that baby calms down because the baby remembers it.
Mm.
It's fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, when Deva Pramal, I'm sure you've heard of her, she was just through the Midwest, and her mother and father were Zen meditators, and the father was able to meditate for hours and chant mantras while his wife was pregnant with, you know, the child who is now Deva Pramal. And when she was when the mother was in labor, they chanted mantras all during the delivery process. And now look at what she and Meet and her husband are doing all over the world. They're bringing these sacred mantras, and can you imagine though lining that all up?
Right.
You know, when I knew part of the story, but it's like, you know, there's just no accident to any of this.
Yes, absolutely. No, it's definitely a continuum, and definitely I believe that our children choose us as parents, and we have chosen our parents. I think it's really amazing to hear all of those stories, and it's also heartening to know that it's not always difficult. Although my experience is most of the real important lessons that the universe teaches us come from very difficult situations, and so we need to remember that that there's always a gift in whatever happens, and if it's a respite of a beautiful day and no challenges, then that's wonderful too. But oftentimes the difficult situations are the ones that really pack a wall up and give us some amazing insights that we're going to be able to share with others.
Well, and you do talk about that in your book, with the characters facing, you know, anxieties and fears of their own, to, you know, to help them heal and grow. And, you know, that you know, rather than, you know, resisting it and why did this happen or whatever, it's just, okay, it's here. You know, what do I do with this?
Right. Yes, absolutely. It's this is not something really to fight, but truly the gifts that these difficult situations give us are basically pearls of wisdom, and that, you know, going back to what I said previously of that basically what we're here to do is to leave the world a better place than it was before we came. The way we do that is to take our wisdom that we've basically our hard-earned wisdom of all of these situations and share that wisdom with others. You know, that's ultimately what we're going to try to do. First, we try to heal ourselves, and then we need to heal our immediate friends and family. And we do that with our experiences. And then ultimately what we need to do is to begin to heal our ancestral line. So all of the people that have gone before us, if there are there souls before us that haven't had their day in the healing sun, if you will, as well as pave the road for future generations. So the way that the universe works with our family line is that we draw strength from all that have gone before us, and we are in line for all that goes in front of us. And so if there are any hidden issues with our family line, what we need to do is we need to reveal those and honor them and heal them, so then we can draw strength from all of those people before us.
You know, part of the work that I do is getting to core thoughts, and this is what you're talking about with that ancestral lineage. And I'll never forget one time I was teaching a workshop. It was actually one of my students who said, "Will you co-facilitate this workshop with me?" She was new in the work. And I said, "Okay." And she was an artist. And so she said, "Okay, let's get to the core thought that is holding a person back, and then I'll teach how to create the T-shirt with the new thought." I said, "Okay." So we had this grandmother and mother and daughter, and the daughter was 16, the mother was, you know, in her early 30s, and the grandmother was, you know, whatever, you get it, three generations. The mother and grandmother were both psychotherapists, and, you know, and here they are, they're thinking they're going to an artistic workshop on Sunday, you know, nice little afternoon outing. Well, one of the things that we did was we got to the core thought. Sometimes it's before you're born, sometimes it's shortly after you're born, and, you know, some of the main ones are, "I'm not good enough, I'm not lovable, I'm not wanted as a woman." If they only picked a boy's name out and they knew that, you know, that there was just, "I'm a disappointment as a woman," you know, there's always, like, gender confusion, all these different things. The core one that happens a lot in our American culture is, "I'm not good enough. You know, if I was this, I'd be okay. If I was that, I'd be okay. If I was prettier, thinner, smarter," all the things that go with it. There were three generations in these women of, "I am not good enough as a woman." During this workshop, the light bulb went off. They're like, "This has been operating our family." I mean, you could just see it in everything that had played out. And in that moment, they got that it was a lie, that wasn't the truth, and that they could transcend this with shifting their thinking and embracing life in a different way. And they all left with their shirts that they created with their new mantra affirmation, "I am more than good enough as a woman," and what symbolized that for them. And, you know, I remember over a year later, I got emails, you know, received emails from them just saying, "Thank you so much. We have changed the way we're working with our clients. Our whole lineage, all the men in our family are treating us differently because they got it."
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. I think that it's really helpful when those core issues are embodied with ancestors that are still alive, and that they allow them to communicate with each other. One of the big challenges that I've seen with some of the healing work that I've done is some of these issues that you're talking about have buried themselves in a history when those people that had those issues are no longer with us. And so obviously that's a little bit more challenging to try to heal, you know, somebody's soul that their body is no longer with us. And so identifying that is sometimes, you know, takes the work of a shaman or some constellation work or different aspects of ancestral healing. But it's just important to know that in order to have a strong family line, all of these core issues need to be resolved throughout our entire history, or else we're really not having the benefit of all of that strength that we could be drawing on. Of course, you know, on ourselves is the first thing. But as you mentioned, even one, two, or three generations behind us can make a huge impact on ourselves.
Well, and you address, I just love that you talk about rituals from different spiritual perspectives and honoring ceremonies and things. And so let's I think this is a perfect segue into that, because, you know, these are the things that, you know, they're milestones.
Right. Well, I believe that in today's day and age, we all have a tendency to to indulge in this sort of hyper individualistic society that we've become, and I think the internet is one of the most important tools in order to facilitate that. Basically, every micro niche we can possibly imagine. If you know, we can just say, I want to surround myself with people that are doing this at this very moment. We can go online and surround ourselves with that. I think that what that's been doing, from a sociological standpoint, is pretty obvious that it's forcing us, or it's encouraging us to isolate ourselves, that we don't actually go out into community as much. People are shopping online more. They're socializing online more. Those sorts of issues. But even more so, I think that what it's doing is it's definitely allowing us to disconnect from our entire lineage before us. So in addition to the people that are alive, like I was talking about before, all of the people that are dead are completely removed from many of our lives. I think that it's important to incorporate ritual into our lives. So the main reason for doing it is to connect with those around us that are bigger than ourselves, to connect ourselves to something bigger than ourselves, whether it's a ritual with our family at the table, saying blessings, connecting ourselves to the people that have made the food, that type of thing, to larger rituals where you might be incorporating some of your own ancestors. So from my perspective, I have a Native American background. So one of the things that I was doing to connect to my ancestral lineage is to become a little bit more involved with the Native American community and some sacred ceremonies within that community in order to connect myself to that lineage behind us. So I think that's the main reason for doing ritual, is to connect ourselves to something larger than ourselves. But ultimately, what we really want to do is have that strong ancestral line. So not only are we drawing the strength, but that we're part of that for the future generation. So if you're becoming a parent, or you are a parent, that you eventually need to start thinking about, future generations and what do you leave that child when you're gone. And that's one of the most powerful things you can do, is that connection to the ancestral line.
Right. And so, I remember, so many years ago studying hospice, which of course originated in France, where they would take care of their loved ones in their homes, instead of putting them in places to die. And I remember reading about it. It was just fascinating to me how families would change whatever they needed to change in order to care for their loved ones, instead of, shipping them off to a home, which sometimes I know that is the only solution. But the whole thing is that it was actually called the hospice movement. And now in the United States, we have set up different systems via, a lot of Kubler-Ross's work, et cetera, on dealing with death and dying. I mean, in the Western culture, it's just not really talked about as much. People aren't quite as comfortable, in my experience, as people who are more Eastern, the more of the Asian population, the Hindu population, they have more of a tendency, in my experience, to take care of their families more, multi-generational.
Yeah, I think that they just have a wider perspective of what is life and what what constitutes history. I think that we're especially in the United States, we're at a considerable disadvantage when it comes to these types of issues, because we're a very young nation, and so the concept of ancient is like a 1920s deco building in downtown LA or something, right? You know, that's considered to be classic architecture, which you know is definitely cool, but it doesn't necessarily give you a perspective of you know an entire lineage. So I think that that's why even Europeans are further ahead than the people in the United States when it comes to you know really seeing the value in our parents and grandparents and how do we connect to an overall history.
So, listeners, we are listening to Scott Bloom. His new book, Winter Moon Rises, was just released today, which is quite exciting. And, you know, this is the third in a trilogy. And he talks about parenting from a whole different perspective, you know, not just the physical world, but looking at, you know, how it's a very spiritual awakening for the parents, for the child, how all of this is just really this very, very overlapping, symbiotic co-creation, so to speak, the parents calling the child in, the child choosing, okay, these are the ones that will help me with my soul development this time around. And so we will take, we have time to take one or two questions. So if you do have a question for Scott, please push one on your phone and then my producer will bring you onto the call. If not, we're going to keep talking. But Nate, if there is someone, please let me know. And a lot of times, Scott, these shows, people are just like, no, keep talking. So I do want to mention, you know, well, before we go to that, is there anything else that I have not asked you that you just feel would be so helpful to our listeners tonight with, you know, because, you know, from, you know, I've raised kids that are now in their 40s, I raised four stepchildren, then I raised three of my own, 25, 22, and 13. And, you know, everything that I've read all about the Indigo Kids, I've read now about the Crystal Kids, you know, that these children that are coming onto planet Earth right now are extremely psychic. They're very present, shall we say. And so I don't know if you want to touch about any of that or any – what else would you like to share before we talk about a little bit about the Daily Om and take a question or two?
Well, I think that one of the things that people oftentimes ask me about is how, you know, when we're talking about soul contracts and what, you know, what is our point being on Earth? I'm supposed to learn these things. How do I go about that? And, you know, how do I know I'm doing it right and that sort of thing? That seems to be a question that people ask a lot, and I definitely feel that it's helped me, especially on my journey of becoming a parent. And I think that the main thing that you really need to try to do is to come to terms with what is your purpose on this planet. What are you here to do? What is your soul path? What is your destiny? What am I supposed to do in the overall scheme of things? And the way you do that is simply by first becoming quiet and identifying with your own intuition. That what you need to do is stop using your brain on these types of issues that we've been talking about, all of the things that we've been talking about today, and really try to use your heart to guide you. And your intuition is a good first step, and eventually you're going to then be able to communicate on a soul level with the universe, and it'll become more and more obvious if you're on the right path in following your destiny. So that's just one thing. It's kind of a bigger discussion, but it's also a gateway into people that might be listening to what we're saying today and saying, well, it seems great in theory, but I have no idea how to start. I think how to start is really identify with your intuition and start trying to make decisions with that informing every moment of your day.
That's beautiful. That's just that. I mean, you know, get out of your head and get into your heart.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and the answers will come. So Nate, do we have a listener with a question for Mr. Bloom? Okay.
I'm just going to bring him up live.
Okay. All right. I guess we do.
Great.
Hello?
Hello?
Oh, hi.
Hello.
Welcome to the call. And your name, please?
Hi. This is Joni.
Hi, Joni.
Hi.
great show. So interesting. I love it.
Thank you. Okay, so what is your question this evening?
Yeah, the question I have is my daughter, she's 19. She's just now 2 months pregnant, and she's pretty much like she's an indigo, so she's sort of like a flower child. And I know that we choose our parents, and I know there's a reason for this, baby to come to her. And I'm just wondering what I can do as a grandmother or soon-to-be grandmother to support this new baby and, having the best experience possible as far as, being pregnant and the labor and the whole thing.
Well, I would say that what I was just talking about is kind of the precursor to that, which is that what you need to eventually do as quickly as you can is to communicate with that baby on a soul level and support that baby with the love and a completely open heart and offer to be there in service to this child. I think your first responsibility from a ancestral standpoint is to support your daughter in everything that she's needing to do. But I think that your grandchild will also appreciate that love. But I think the first thing that you need to do is get quiet with yourself and come down to the purest essence of soul communication, which is love. And so if you can identify with that, and you don't even need to speak, but just communicate that love initially to your daughter, and then to your grandchild, I think will be the most important thing you can do at this point.
Okay, thank you. That's great. As far as the ancestral line, I was pregnant with my first at around just a little older, actually at 20, and kind of in the same position. And then my son, my firstborn, actually had the same thing happen with my granddaughter I have now. And then my daughter is doing the same thing. So, it's amazing how we run these patterns through the family.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm going to get your books because they sure sound great, and I appreciate this show. You guys are doing great.
Oh, thank you
very
much.
Thank you. All right, good night.
Okay. All right, bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, so Nate, do we have another caller with a question?
Not at this time.
Okay, so we're going to come back. It's just so fascinating. And, when you become aware of the family patterns, then that's half of it right there. And then, I really like how you suggested getting quiet and really tuning into the child and how can she be of service to the child. But, it's the mother first because the lineage, that is, just thank you. Okay, so we just have a few more moments, and listeners, I just want to give you a couple of websites. You can go to www.scottblum.net, and that's scottblum.net, and there's information there about, all three of Scott's books. You can also go to dailyom.com, and that is just the way it sounds, daily, D-A-I-L-Y, and then om.com. This is a website that, he has done with his wife, Madison Taylor. And, why don't we talk about the Daily Om? I mean, there's millions of readers every single day. So let's just talk about that. I mean, would you like to tell us the conception and how that came to be?
Sure. I was working in the entertainment business. I started one of the first music websites called iMusic, and we were based in Seattle, and a company in Los Angeles purchased it. So Madison and I moved down to Los Angeles, and she started an aromatherapy company, which got quite successful, and I was in the midst of the LA entertainment industry grind, commuting every 45 minutes each way to my job, and we spent every waking hour we could when we weren't working doing yoga, meditating, just doing anything spiritual we could possibly do just to deal with the craziness of being in Los Angeles. And after a while, her aromatherapy company got so big that I quit my job and started to work with her full time. And after about a week of working together, we had a heart-to-heart discussion, and we said, you know what, if we're going to continue to work together like this, why don't we see if we can find a way that we can integrate our personal interest in spirituality with our professional lives. And so we came up with the concept of De Leon purely for selfish reasons. We just wanted to live this way ourselves 24 hours a day and not just use spirituality as a crutch to get through the day. So that's what we did. We started that. Madison started writing messages. I used my my background in technology and marketing to get those messages out to different people. And then, of course, you know, 2 or 3 months later, we realized that we weren't in control of this, that we were actually in service to the universe. And although we thought we were being selfish at first, that wasn't really what the universe had in mind. So that began our journey.
De Leon to me is like the spiritual Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
I know it sounds, you know, maybe crazy to put it that way, but, you know, and I love that Facebook now, you have to choose if you want to have a message from each and every person, or do you want to just, like, look at it weekly or whoever you want. But the De Leon is the De Leon. You know, it is the listeners, I'm telling you, you have to go to DeLeon.com if this is striking a chord and sign up for it, because it's delivered right there to your email box. And, you know, like, there are certain times when, you know, something's going on in my life, and then there it is. It's like, oh, there it is. You know, and it just, I mean, I can't even imagine creating all of the daily, you know, with the music, but you already were working with a musician, so that makes sense that you have the De Leon music.
Right. Right. That's the one that I actually edit myself. Madison's responsible for all of the content, but that's the one that I do myself just because of my background.
Well, and it's fascinating. And you know, Spirit Seeker reviews these music CDs every month, and you know, this. I mean, it's just a different way that we did it. But, you know, I was talking to my editor many years ago, and I said, you know, I love music. So do you. You've been reviewing all these, you know, yoga DVDs and, you know, all this. I said, how would you feel about doing music reviews? And she said, well, what would that look like? I said, well, we'll just find amazing musicians that want, you know, an avenue for their work. I said, you'll get a CD, I'll get a CD, and you'll write the review, and we won't charge them a penny because they'll be thrilled to reach our Spirit Seeker readers.
Right.
I kid you not. It's like it has developed into this amazing gift from the universe. I mean, the CDs arrive just like the books arrive every week, just like, you know, De Leon. But De Leon is in my email box, and I'm a happy girl. So, I mean, do you have any idea, like, how many people are getting the De Leon messages?
Well, we have 1.2 million subscribers, and then, you know, many of those people forward them on to their friends. So I'd say millions is conservative of the people that are touched by De Leon. And then now that we also, in addition to the daily messages, we also have online courses from many best-selling authors. And so that's definitely widened the reach as well, because, you know, people like Deepak Chopra or Debbie Ford or Andrew Harvey or Gay Hendricks or whomever write online courses with us, and then you have a chance to work with those people. And one of the fun things about De Leon is we don't necessarily do everything the same way that everybody else does, and so for the online courses, you know, we let people pay whatever they want, which I'm very happy with. So we don't really limit the knowledge of some of these amazing people by how much money you have, which I like.
It's all there. It's all there, seek and find, and, you know, and I just forward, you know, that's interesting. I never really even thought about the cross-pollination, but it is true. You know, like, people just see something, they forward it onto their email list. You can save it, you know, there's a little way you can save the De Leon for future reference, and, you know, and I'm a feng shui consultant, so I'm always like, oh my gosh, this is perfect feng shui. Total alignment with, you know, some of the, you know, love it, use it, lose it, which is, you know, it's just every day is just a treat. And you are just helping the world in so many ways. And these books, you know, I mean, I'm just so glad that the listener that called in said, oh, I'm going to buy all three books, because, you know, your books are wonderful. And you're doing such a service for mankind. So mankind and womankind, for humankind, let's put it that way.
Thank you very much.
I'm
trying to do is just be honest with my, you know, with myself and sharing as honestly as I can. So if that helps others, I'm really happy.
Okay, so listeners, dailyom.com, scottbloom.com, or scottbloom.net. And,
yes.
You know, just this is just wonderful. Now, remember, listeners, this show is archived. This is the part of a blog radio show. So you've listened to this. You've enjoyed it. It's just like the Daily Om. You can just, you know, send the link to your friends saying you can actually go to spiritseeker.com, and in the upper left-hand corner, you'll see a link to the Blog Talk radio show. You just click on it. You go, every single show that I've ever done is archived there. So you can listen to it at your leisure. So, you know, it's your own school here. And then the other thing that helps us is if you, two ways that you can help Spirit Seeker and the radio show here grow and help the people that are kind enough to give of their time to come on to the show is if you favorite the show on Blog Talk, it moves the page up closer toward the front of Blog Talk, which if someone's looking for a spiritual nourishment, then all of a sudden they find the Cindy Meyer Spirit Seeker Show easier. The other thing is if you favorite it, then you get a reminder when the show's coming on the air. And it also, if you will send an email to info@spiritseeker.com, then requesting to be put on our email list, then we have an email blast that we do not, you know, send out more than 3 or 4 times a month. Today we let all of our people on our list know about Scott's book coming out. You know, a few days ago we let them know about the radio show. So we let you know about wonderful guests that are coming on the show. We let you know about global events that are happening because now we're all connected more than ever before. And so we do not sell our list, but you are allowed to, you know, we do allow people to advertise their events on our list so that we can, you know, be more of a support globally with everything that's going on. Okay, so just send me an email to info@spiritseeker.com. I will add you to the list. It's sacrosanct. You will, you know, find out about more wonderful evenings like tonight. So I have to tell you, this has just been a pleasure. I've looked forward to this interview. I mean, I look forward to all of them. But there are just certain ones that's just, you know, an honor and privilege, you know, to meet you. And thank you so much for all that you're doing for all of us.
Well, thank you for what you're doing as well. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with me.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, well, may we continue to be conscious parents and people. Remembering
that's wonderful.
This from love. Thank you so much, Scott. Okay, good night, listeners. I'll be back next week. Okay, good night.